golfers, get ready to elevate your Saturday mornings. Yeah, it's Brian Murphy here, and I am thrilled to introduce the Clubhouse Corner with Ben and Eddie. This is a passion project from the good folks at the Clubhouse in Fremont. These two are on a mission to make golf accessible and enjoyable for the masses. So set your alarm. 7 a.m. every Saturday, join Ben and Eddie at the Clubhouse Corner, only on KNBR.
Welcome back, everybody. Scott Reese with you on this Wednesday night, and our next guest has a lengthy, rather impressive resume, currently with Sports Info Solutions, but he's an author, he's a baseball historian. He tried in vain to make me look smarter back in the Baseball Tonight days at ESPN. He is Mark Simon. Mark, good to have you on again, and let's dive in with this National League West, right? Giants drop one today, so the 12-game win streak over the Rockies is now a thing of the past, but, you know, a week ago, everybody was looking at this and saying, hey, all five teams over 500. I think we all know this is a three-team race. Is that a fair assessment of the division, that the Giants, Padres, and Dodgers are probably in this thing for the long haul and the Rockies and Diamondbacks probably are not?
Yeah, I think so. Like, the Diamondbacks are hitting, like, what, 200? I think
that's bad, right?
Yeah.
Even in today's baseball, that's bad.
Yes, 200 is always going to be not good.
Okay.
At least as long as we're still here, 200 should still be bad. But I don't think the Rockies have the talent to compete with those other teams. And I think the Giants had a nice response after a little bit of a skid by putting together this nice win streak that gets to go to Colorado. Yaz heats up. I think there sometimes are concerns about him. Like, anytime he goes into a slump, there's a thought like, oh, he's never going to come out of it. And he's looked pretty good the last week or so. He was totally locked in. I think the Padres are right there with the Giants. I do think that the Dodgers are a notch ahead, simply, again, talent-wise. I think they're the best team in the division. They're probably the best team in the National League right now.
So I'm going to challenge you on that. I agree with you. Dodgers, best team in the National League, probably maybe the best team in baseball. And we'll talk about, you know, Dodgers, Yankees, and that sort of thing in a bit. But Yep. But Clayton Kershaw's got a back thing, right? And, you know, they wanted him to throw today, and turns out he didn't throw today. And now you have to look at what happened last year, when initially it seemed like it might be a shorter-term injury, and he basically missed the last, 6 to 8 weeks of the season. And you wonder, is this a big deal? And if it is a big deal, Mark, do we look at this Dodgers rotation and suddenly put it up next to the Giants and Padres and say, yeah, it's a little bit thin?
maybe a little bit. I would worry about what they would do in a month or two if they had to make a deal, because they always seem to have chips that they can play with. I think that of the three teams, like, if I was power ranking arms, I would put Walker Buehler ahead of Logan Webb. And I would put, I think I would put Musgrove pretty close with Logan Webb at this point. I think that I would put Urias and Rodon. I understand that people are going to say that the Giants guy's amazing, except for, you know, St. Louis. But yeah, I feel like in the end, that's probably a wash, right? So now you're looking at the depth aspect of the rotation. And it just feels like that when the Dodgers have to get depth, like that Gonsolin turns out to be good, or Tyler Anderson turns out to be good. His strikeout to walk right now is 7-1. Or they find like an Andrew Heaney type, sure, and he turns out to be good. So I would say that I would still put the Dodgers ahead of the Giants. The loss of Kershaw wouldn't do it for me. For me, what would I think change the equation in the NL West a little bit would be if you took out Mookie Betts, or if you took out Trey Turner, or if you took out especially Freddie Freeman. I think that those are separators lineup-wise that the Giants mix and match can try and contend with, but over the long haul of the season, I'm not sure that they can.
Fair enough. That said, Giants still off to a really good start. I think, you know, most people expect they will be a competitive playoff-caliber team for the balance of the season. What do you like about this Giants team?
I like the style of play in that the mix and match does, like, it just bears out every single time. They go to a guy in the fifth inning and he seems to either, maybe he doesn't get the hit in the fifth inning, but he gets the hit in the seventh inning. And that's like a very Slater-ish kind of thing to do, or it's a Wilmer-ish thing to do, or a Tyro Estrada or a Darren Ruff or whatever it is. So I like that. I like the fact that they don't really have burners on this team, and that they have some guys that, quite frankly, are slugs base running wise. They're a pretty smart base running team. We had a stat that we passed along to Dave and John Crooked Kite the other day about how, in terms of taking the extra base, the Giants rate among the best teams in baseball. And that's where kind of like the sneakiness of Brandon Crawford comes in, or some of the other guys. Tyro Estrada is good at that. Crawford, I think at the time that we sent the stat, was like 6-for-6 scoring from second on a single. So I like that. And then the other thing to really like about them is the OBP, all the walks, the abundance of walks, because no one's hitting these days. So you need the walks to put guys on base and create opportunities for yourself so that when you hit the ball out of the ballpark, they're multi-run home runs as opposed to solo home runs. And then the bullpen's been really good. Alvarez, notwithstanding today, he's been pretty good. Harlan Garcia has a 0 ERA, 13 in the third innings, 4 hits coming into the day. Brebbia has been really good. Like Brebbia looks like he could be a guy that could contend for that 7th, 8th inning spot. Leon's been mostly good. Tyler Rogers has been mostly good. Doval seems to have straightened out his early season iffiness. So I think those are three things that jump out to me right now where I would feel pretty good about them.
Talking baseball with Mark Simon from Sports Info Solutions here on KNBR, the sports leader. You can follow Mark on Twitter at Mark A. Simon Says, one of the more catchy, clever Twitter handles. We see Jake Junis is the latest reclamation project, right? He's had two really good starts for this team. And you look at the Giants and some of the other teams around baseball, the Rays, the Marlins, the Astros, there are teams that just seem to have it kind of figured out when it comes to maximizing pitcher effectiveness. What is the secret sauce, and why isn't everybody else copying it?
Well, I was trying to think of this because at some point I want to ask, I want to somehow like talk to Brian Bannister and try and figure out what this is. But I think it's like the thing that like that comes up with like a Junis is I think they find something in a pitch, whether it's the slider or a curveball or a changeup or whatever it is, and they just decide to expose the heck out of that pitch, and they're just going to use that pitch until it breaks down. And that's what you're seeing from Junis right now, because he's basically abandoned his fastball and he's throwing a lot of sliders and he's been pretty unhittable. I'm curious to see what he will be like the second time that and third time that all these teams get to see him, right? Yeah. Like, because everyone's going to adjust to this. He's this is a guy who, all right, typically throws whatever percent fastballs that he was throwing, whatever percent changeups that he was throwing. And now all of a sudden he's like 50% sliders. Okay, we got to like readjust to this and change things. So I think that's one thing. Like Tyler Rogers, you have the unusual arm angle. So they decide to maximize that by having him throw this wicked slider that just kind of like, you know, comes in on the left-handed hitter like crazy and makes them very uncomfortable. He becomes an uncomfortable at bat. So I think if you look at the Rays, there have been articles written about this that like the Rays have a guy who can throw from every arm angle. And I think that they either are looking for that or they're looking for something in the pitch numbers with spin rate and stuff that I don't necessarily have a great grasp of. But there's something there where they say we can expose this by maximizing it. You might as well throw it as much as you can because it's clearly your best thing.
Well, and we saw it again yesterday with Drew Rasmussen, right? The guy they got in the Adames trade last year, not overpowering stuff, but he looks like an all-star. I mean, it's really remarkable just over and over some of these organizations. You know, we've seen it with the Marlins and obviously their depth of pitching as well. So, Mark, interesting article on ESPN today. And of course, you know, they're pandering to the large markets and we get it. It's a fun storyline. But you know what? Hey, it's true. You got the two L.A. teams, the Dodgers and Angels, and the two New York teams, the Mets and Yankees, all in first place simultaneously for the first time ever. So that said, I know you're a Mets fan. if I asked you, you know, in terms of the duo that's going to perform the best over the long haul, are you taking L.A. or are you taking New York?
I think I'm taking New York, and let me see if I can walk through it here. I feel like the Mets right now, everything about them to me, and I was wrong on this last year. Maybe I'll be wrong on it this year, but everything I see in them makes me think that they're going to win 100 games. And I think that it's the combination of the National League East not being very good right now, and the Mets having a very veteran-oriented team lineup-wise that hopefully for their sake will be able to withstand whatever issues they run into health-wise with DeGrom and maybe Scherzer and maybe Carrasco and maybe Bassett and maybe Taijuan Walker. They have a way about them this year that they're doing. Every time there's been a little thing that they've had to do in a game, they've executed it in order to basically steal a run. And they've never been out of a game. Like, they had that huge comeback win against the Phillies where they scored 7. The game that they lost, the games that they've lost the last couple of days, the Mariners and the Cardinals, they were behind. They came all the way back, just couldn't finish it off. So I think they're a team that looks like a 100-win team. The Yankees very clearly look like a 100-win team, too. They're 27-9 coming into the day. They have been in crush mode really since the first week of the season. People thought that Aaron Boone should be fired, which was kind of absurd, but they've hit, they've slugged, they've got power throughout the lineup with Rizzo, Judge, Stanton, etc. They've played really, really, really good defense, and they've gotten the nice surprise that they've got Gerrit Cole at the top of the rotation, but then Nestor Cortez is the number two, and Taijuan looks healthy. I think they look very good in their starting rotation. They might have one of the better starting rotations in baseball. So I think that both of those teams are 100-win teams. I think the Dodgers are an 100-win team. I don't think that's a difficult thing to necessarily say. I'm not sold that the Angels are an 100-win team yet, just because I feel like the starting rotation, I'm not necessarily all in on, Lorenzen and a fully healthy Syndergaard at this point, who's striking out 7 per 9 innings and not throwing as hard as he was throwing with the Mets. I'm not all the way there on them yet. I feel like they have to prove it to me. It's nice that they have a healthy Trout. It's nice that they have a healthy Ohtani. But I am not quite to the point of confidence with them yet to say, oh, this is an 100-win team, even though they've improved significantly on the defensive side, too. In fact, they've arguably changed their defensive performance as much as any team in baseball. And it's a guy who's hitting .196 that's leading that. And Andrew Velasquez, their shortstop.
So I love the analysis. It occurred to me while you were answering that, the symmetry in the very question, because you have, of course, the perennial Goliaths and powerhouses with the huge payrolls and the Dodgers and the Yankees. And then you have the Mets and the Angels, who every year are seemingly very much contenders in March. And every year it's a question of, okay, how are they going to screw it up this year? So I suppose even as a Mets fan, as scarred as you are, you believe they're in it for the long haul, and the Angels maybe not so much.
I am normally one of the most pessimistic people that you could imagine when it comes to the sports teams that I follow. But if you watched the games, and you'll see that this, I don't want to say it has an 86-ish feel to it, because I feel like that was one of a kind, but the Mets current team has a very 2006 feel to it, which is a pretty good feel to have. That was a team that got all the way to game 7 and lost to the Cardinals. And just everything, they just look right. There are a lot of years where they can be good, but they don't necessarily look right. This year, they really look right.
So I look at the landscape, you look at the standings right now, and from my vantage point, I look at the National League and I basically feel like there are 9 teams playing for 6 playoff spots. And in the American League, it's even worse. I look at it in mid-May and I say, you know what? There are 7 teams playing for 6 playoff spots. Now, look, you could argue as to whether there might be more contenders or fewer contenders, but that's bad, right? I mean, it's bad that we're not even a quarter away into the season and we can basically pinpoint at this point 15 teams that are relevant and 15 teams that aren't relevant.
Yeah, I totally agree. It's funny. Before I came on with you, I was trying to put teams into like slots, like tiers, and I had established that my first tier teams were really the division leaders in the National League, Mets, Brewers, Dodgers. I felt like that was tier one. And then the Yankees are right there with them. And the Astros are maybe in that 1A with the Padres and maybe the Giants and maybe the Twins and maybe the Angels. But when you go beyond that, like you can eliminate like the Orioles, the Tigers, the Royals, the Guardians, sorry, the A's, the Mariners. It's a little frustrating right now.
The Rangers, the Reds, the Pirates, the Cubs, yeah. Right? I mean, it's obvious. Yeah. The Diamondbacks, the Rockies. I mean, it's too easy to go through, and there might be four teams that are those swing teams, the White Sox and, you know, the Cardinals, that are interesting, right? But there should be more than that. It's May.
Especially with more playoff spots available this year compared to previous years. Like the one, I was listening to someone else talk about this, and I guess the one team that maybe you could be convinced on that's in that kind of below 500 phase that maybe they could get up there and get that sixth spot somehow would be Miami. But in order for Miami to make the postseason, it would mean that someone among the Cardinals, right, Padres, Giants don't, presuming you like all the division winners a lot. The Braves are essentially in the same boat. And that's, at this moment, like, I don't feel like there's anything convincing there that would tell me that one of those teams is in the playoffs and the six that we mentioned are not. It just doesn't feel like it.
Couple other odds and ends. Nate Eovaldi becomes the third pitcher ever to allow 5 home runs in one inning. That's really hard to do. I mean, that is really hard to do. And he's a good pitcher. But your thoughts when you see something like that?
I feel like it fits within the context of the Red Sox season.
Yeah, right.
Because I think that they're like, they shouldn't be this bad. He shouldn't be that bad for one day, right? Like, they're a better team than what they've shown so far. They're 0-6 in extra inning games. They've had some really bad, as much as the Mets have had good wins come back, the Red Sox have had these awful blown lead losses that it just makes you think it's not their year and that they can't possibly be this bad. I was looking at Eovaldi. The thing that struck me is like that it's a miracle that his ERA starts with a 4 when he's given up a home run every 3 innings for the season, 14 and 42 innings. That's crazy.
Yeah, it went up from, what, 3.315 to 4.32 in that one outing. It certainly could be worse. All right, I want to end on this because you were a guest on this podcast is making me thirsty. Right.
I was. Yes.
Which is a Seinfeld podcast. And, you know, look, we all know Seinfeld fans are certainly aware of the connection between the show and baseball. Obviously, Jerry's a big Mets fan and we saw Keith Hernandez and all that play out. But I was just wondering what that experience was like because I'm a big Seinfeld guy.
Ah, so this podcast is making me thirsty. They interview guest stars and super fans. You should be on with them, as a matter of fact. They've ranked every episode from 1 to whatever number they have. They have interviewed probably 25 of the girlfriends. They've interviewed like almost all of the writers. If you're into Seinfeld, I would very, very, very highly recommend their podcast. And I will tell them that you should be on their podcast because they love talking to sports guys.
That's fabulous. Sign me up. And by the way, you'll appreciate this. One of my favorite moments from my ESPN tenure was a late night ESPN news shift. And for those who may not be familiar, maybe not remember, ESPN news was like on a half hour loop. So if you were doing a 3-hour shift late at night, you might do the exact same show 6 times in a row, save for like one Giants highlight because the game wasn't over yet. So Pat Boyle and I were in there doing the same show 6 times in a row. And finally, the last half hour, it was after midnight. We were totally loopy. And just before we came up on the opening 2 shot, we looked at each other and said, most Seinfeld references wins. And so for the next half hour, it was just this litany of, you know, not that there's anything wrong with that. And, you know, these pretzels are making me thirsty. And I mean, just on and on and on. And it was probably the best half hour of, certainly the most fun half hour of television I've ever done. I know you can appreciate that. And, you know, again, just the link between Seinfeld and baseball, in my mind, it lives in infamy.
Yeah, it's fantastic. And I'll give you one reference as we close this out. When you hit the high note, as we feel that we have, sometimes you just walk off.
There you go. Got it. Exactly. Yep. It was a mic drop before it was a mic drop. Mark,
exactly.
Thank you. Appreciate it. It's been fun. And we'll talk to you down the line.
Cool. Thanks, Scott.
Golfers, get ready to elevate your Saturday mornings. Yeah, it's Brian Murphy here, and I am thrilled to introduce the Clubhouse Corner with Ben and Eddie. This is a passion project from the good folks at the Clubhouse in Fremont. These two are on a mission to make golf accessible and enjoyable for the masses. So set your alarm. 7 a.m. every Saturday, join Ben and Eddie at the Clubhouse Corner, only on KNBR.